from deep inside your radio.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the Observer newspaper in London leads on this occasion with a story quoting a report to be issued this week by the World Wildlife Fund. Those are the people who forced the World Wrestling Federation to stop using the initials WWF. So they're tougher than wrestlers. They changed their name to WWE, Worldwide. Something. Entertainment. I thought it should be WWP for pandering, but anyway, the World Wildlife Fund, back to the story, has this report which suggests that the rate of human exploitation of the animals and plant resources, animal and plant resources of the planet Earth, has increased in such a destructive rate over the last 30 years that if it continues for another 40, humans will have to colonize at least two other planets to survive. So that's, you know, that's in line with our observation that the British, especially the British Sunday newspapers, love to scare us. Now that's a plausible, that's not nothing. As I say, these are the people who scared the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation, out of using the F, scared the F out of the WWF. Now, on the other hand, a listener emails me this week another quote by H.L. Mencken. You know, we've been on the Mencken watch about the best-known quote, "Nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public." But here's one. Quote, H.L. Mencken, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary," unquote. On the other hand, both things could be true. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hypnotize, and they take you off. Just don't mean a thing. In a little while I could tell you everything. But we've taken sides in anger and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how. I'd like to break it to you gently where we go wrong. If the rock begins rolling, we just tag along. If at first we pick the lover things that we both lack, then before we think to stop, we're into hurting back. Then an avalanche of answers must be found too fast. Hasty made just when we should build to last. Love what we like what we share. Correction comes with time to spare. Taken sides in anger and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how. I'd like to tell you that it's fine, but it's not time now. I can't seem to get a word in edgewise anyhow. Though the words are flying fast, it just don't mean a thing. In a little while, I could tell you everything. But we've taken sides in anger and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how.
Dos desencantos que que com o tempo deixasse de sonhar. Hoje ela bebe e fuma, nunca numa de amanhã. Nonchalante, joias, barras, outros caras, en passant, sempre en passant. Será isso que ela quer? Não, sofisticada dama infeliz, sente que o amor às vezes chora na solidão. Sofisticada dama infeliz, sente que o amor não foi por triz, e às vezes chora na solidão.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the 4th of July weekend edition of Le Show. It differs from ordinary editions of Le Show merely by its proximity to a national holiday. But that's good. I have a lot of mail to catch up on, and I might as well do it on your nickel. This from a listener in Minnesota. Chuck in Minnesota sends this in because I don't normally read the St. Paul Pioneer Press. But here's at least one story that indicates there's some good reading in the Pioneer Press. A Sunday school teacher who asked a 16-year-old boy to write, "What would Jesus do on his penis?" will spend a month on work release, according to the sentencing agreement reached this week in Ramsey County District Court. Todd Warren, 42, who pleaded guilty in April to a misdemeanor count of indecent exposure, was also originally ordered to write a letter describing the incident to fellow worshippers at Prairie Oak Community Church. But the church balked at that part of the sentence, arguing that such a letter would be considered pornographic and would identify the teenage victim. The Ramsey County judge instead allowed the pastor to write a letter to his congregation and simply keep the letter in the case file. A note from the victim's mother supported the decision. The Reverend Steve Gehagan's letter contains less description about the incident and asks parishioners to pray for protection and reconciliation. "The evil one has struck a tremendous blow to our congregation," Gehagan wrote. It's the evil one that did it. I see. I get it. Warren, a nuclear... Now, this is the St. Paul Pioneer Press, ladies and gentlemen, describes Todd Warren, the Sunday school teacher who asked a 16-year-old boy to write, "What would Jesus do on his penis?" He's described as a nuclear pharmacist. Somewhere, something went wrong there. A nuclear pharmacist. All right, then. He befriended the boy at church and briefly hired him as an employee, according to court papers. Last September, Warren took the boy to a park and asked him personal and sexual questions about homosexuality and other practices. He invited the boy to his office and said writing, "What would Jesus do on his penis would prevent sexual temptation?" Yes. Good point. He also asked for daily email updates about the boy's sexual thoughts. The day of sentencing, wrote the boy's mother to the judge, was the beginning of the healing process for our family. The pastor stressed that Warren was not acting in a church role when he invited the boy to his office. He has resigned from the board of the church, and he and his family are no longer part of the congregation. So that's the news, not from Lake Wobegon, from slightly south. A listener, Tim, writes to explain why I raised the question last week of why systems that control crucial parts of our infrastructure, our electric grid, our dams, and so forth, are not only computer-controlled, we understand that, we're modern, but why they're connected to the Internet. There is, by the way, in one of today's Australian papers, an interesting story about an incident being studied now by U.S. law enforcement of an incident in the year 2000 when a disgruntled guy took control of the water system along the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia, and flooded it with sewage because he wanted to get a job to clean it up. That's now being studied by... Anyway, so here's Tim writing, "I think I have the explanation of why control systems are on the Internet. I actually have personally myself connected control systems to the Internet. The reason I was asked to do this and did it is because managers need the information that control systems generate at their fingertips. Naturally, this is so they can ignore it and do whatever they were going to do anyway, but at least it makes them feel better." This is Tim writing. "In order to give managers their fingertip information, you need to provide a link between the control system and the desktop system of the managers, which are usually on the Internet as well. Most smart organizations put a firewall between the control and desktop systems to block unauthorized traffic, but if the link is there, it's vulnerable. Some organizations, perhaps due to budget concerns, don't even bother with the firewall, which, of course, is much worse. Even though all this information is provided to the managers right on their desks, they insist on having you devise an elaborate system to print it out automatically so they can bring it into meetings with them." Tim doesn't sound very happy at his job, does he? Danny writes, "I'm retired, although young." Congratulations. Now he's bragging. "From the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, to those of us who've worked in the field, it certainly comes as no surprise to hear the professional firefighters were behind some recent fires. I had a little training on arson and a small bit of experience on operations to catch arsonists. I was once told by a colleague that if the truth be known, over half the set fires were done by professional firefighters and not always for money. I know of one current professional firefighter who's been setting fires for 15 years, but we could never nail him. When it got too hot, pun intended, he would stop for as long as 2 or 3 years. Probably using a scanner, he would wait till the most opportune time and set several over the course of a few hours. Even arson investigators have set fires and been convicted. What was usual about the recent Colorado fire was the starter's gender." This is a curative, perhaps, for the journalistic sin of, "Oh my God, a fire was started by a firefighter." So that would catch us up on our mail, ladies and gentlemen. It's good mail, don't you think? Other stories to scare you from the British press include the bill for dealing with the legacy of Britain's civilian nuclear program has risen to $60 billion, and the final cost could be higher still, the government said yesterday. Government officials said the taxpayers would have to part with $30 billion over the next 15 years just to fund the new body being created to take charge of the cleanup of nuclear power stations and research establishments. Critics of the nuclear industry say the figures are further evidence the government should veto the building of any new nuclear stations. However, a leaked government report suggested that it's looking for ways to go ahead with up to 8 new reactors by easing planning restrictions. That's nice. That's a nice thing. The World Health Organization's chief, Harlem Brundtland, warned parents this week against letting their children spend too much time on cell phones and said their electromagnetic waves give her a headache. Brundtland, the World Health Organization Director General, does not own a cell phone and forbids anyone to use one in her Geneva office, saying this is to protect herself from the waves. If you enter my office, you're invited by me. No one who's invited would like to give me headaches, Brundtland said in Oslo. I would be cautious about letting children use cell phones for hours every day because we don't know enough about the damage, Brundtland said. The same goes for microwaves, she added. I'd be cautious about letting children do anything for hours a day. But that's because I don't have kids. Ladies and gentlemen, Dateline New York, multi-platinum singer Michael Jackson, already feuding with this record company, charges now that the recording industry was a racist conspiracy that turns profits at the expense of performers, particularly minority artists. The recording companies really, really do conspire against the artists. They steal, they cheat, they do everything they can, Jackson said in a rare public appearance, especially against the black artists. He spoke at the Reverend Al Sharpton's deal in Harlem. Sharpton and Johnny Cochran recently formed a coalition to investigate whether artists are being financially exploited by record labels. Guys, I can save you the money. The answer is yes. Jackson also singled out Sony Music chairman Tommy Mottola, saying, quote, he was mean, he's a racist, and he's very, very, very devilish. That's three verys. Did he cause Michael to write, what would Jesus... No, I don't think he did. Jackson also accused Mottola of using the N-word when speaking about an unidentified black Sony artist. Sony issued a statement calling Jackson's comments ludicrous, spiteful, and hurtful. It seems particularly bizarre that he's chosen to launch an ugly attack on an executive who's championed his career for years. Sony is calling Michael Jackson ludicrous and bizarre. Welcome to the club, Sony. It's a little late to join, but the door is always open. Sony produced Jackson's last album, which had disappointing sales despite $25 million being spent on promoting it. Jackson believes that wasn't enough. Singer's fans say Sony didn't do enough to launch the album. Others in the industry say sagging sales were indicative of Jackson's declining appeal. He mentioned several black artists as victims of the industry, did Jackson, including James Brown, Mariah Carey. He mentioned her as a black artist. Okay, maybe she is. I don't know. And Sammy Davis Jr. Jackson alleged that Davis died penniless, although Davis's attorney said in 1990 that he left an estate worth more than $6 million when he died. Jackson told a crowd, if you fight for me, you're fighting for all black people dead and alive. About 150 fans gathered later outside Sony's New York headquarters, holding signs reading, please, Sony, stop killing the music. Terminate Tommy Mottola, and other signs. Jackson arrived at Sony's headquarters on a double-decker city tour bus that twice circled the block. He stood in the open top deck and, raising his fists, joined the crowd in chanting, down with Tommy Mottola. He held up a poster with three boxes marked the good, the bad, and the ugly, with an image of himself in the good box, and Mottola's face with devilish horns in the bad box. Mottola's real image was in the ugly box. So Michael's got a little time on his hands, it sounds like, now. Now that Invincible has tanked. So, now, I guess he'll be getting plastic surgery to change that shade again. What do you think? Oh, you know what you think. And now, ladies and gentlemen, they stop, they start, sometimes they do. It's the apology of the week. This week in plural, it's the apologies of the week here on the show. Amtrak overruled its local station managers and restored a Herald and News rack to its Klamath Falls, Oregon station. On behalf of Amtrak, I am so sorry, said Amtrak spokeswoman Angie Starr, who's based right here in Los Angeles. No excuses, we would like to have your paper stay in the station. This is after the Klamath Falls Amtrak station agent ordered the newspaper Monday to remove the news rack from the depot after he disagreed with an editorial in last week's edition that said Amtrak isn't vital to the national security and it's never going to be in the black. But Amtrak has apologized. Also apologizing this week, Mike Ovitz, former most powerful man in Hollywood. Now, not so. He apologized Tuesday for his comments in a Vanity Fair magazine article, which is just out, in which he blames his downfall on a group he calls Hollywood's gay mafia. "I made some statements that were inappropriate during an open and frank discussion with Vanity Fair," Ovitz said in a statement. "In particular, the term gay mafia does not reflect my true feelings or attitudes. It is regrettable, and I am truly sorry." He blamed many people in the Vanity Fair interview, not all of them gay, for his problems. He said he's the victim of a well-orchestrated attack campaign by his numerous enemies in Hollywood. "I know how hard it is for people to see me as a victim," he's quoted as saying in the Vanity Fair piece. But in this case, it's pretty close to the truth. You know what? Pretty close to the truth, I guess, is a real high standard these days. Let's measure everything by that standard now, ladies and gentlemen. It's pretty close to the truth, and let's go into that falsetto range when we do so. Eli Lilly, the drug company, has apologized for mailing Prozac weekly to people who didn't necessarily order it or weren't prescribed it. "It is inappropriate for Lilly sales personnel to support programs in which medicine is mailed to patients without the patient's request," said the Lilly spokeswoman in apologizing. "We understand why people should be concerned about receiving unsolicited prescriptions in the mail. To the extent Lilly personnel may have participated in this program, Lilly apologizes to those patients affected by it." To the extent Lilly personnel may have participated in the program, the New York Times reports they did, and they were the only ones participating. But to that extent that they may have, they apologize. The chief executive of WorldCom has apologized for past transgressions at the firm and pledged cooperation as the government probes accounting irregularities totaling billions of dollars. He laid the blame for any wrongdoing at the feet of the past administration, a reference to the firm's founder, Bernie Ebbers. So, WorldCom apologizes. And, by the way, speaking of WorldCom's apology, George W. Bush is preparing. Here are people who have to be working very hard this weekend. The people who are writing George W. Bush's speech calling for a return to integrity in the business world. He's delivering it on Tuesday. And they have to be working very hard because just now we are reminded that George W. Bush profited mightily, well, to a significant extent, by using interesting accounting practices at a firm he owned, or was a part owner of, Harkin Oil, to be able to sell stock while the profits of Harkin were inflated. They were later deflated when the company admitted that they'd been using interesting accounting practices, and the admission got to the Securities and Exchange Commission 8 months late. The Bush administration has issued conflicting explanations for that delay, but now proposed or supposed to be proposing that such disclosures happen within 2 days. So this will be an interesting speech, I do think. And finally, in the apologies of the week, this from L. Brent Bozell. Media Research Center, Parents Television Council, Dr. Dolores Tucker, Mark Honig, and I have in the past made statements regarding so-called wrestling deaths, children killed by other children alleged to be mimicking professional wrestling moves they saw on television. Parents Television Council also produced a videotape in connection with its national campaign to clean up TV Now, which advanced the notion that the murder of one child was influenced by professional wrestling on another child. "We based our statements on media reports and source information. We now believe, based on extensive investigation and facts which have come to light, that it was wrong for us to have said anything that construed as blaming World Wrestling Entertainment or any of its programs for the deaths of the children. Simply put, it was premature to reach that conclusion when we did, and there is now ample evidence that conclusion was incorrect. Because of our statements, we've been in litigation with World Wrestling. By this retraction, I want to be clear that World Wrestling was correct in pointing out that various statements made by me were inaccurate concerning the identity and number of World Wrestling SmackDown advertisers who withdrew support from the program. Many of the companies we stated had withdrawn or pulled their support had never, in fact, advertised on SmackDown. Finally, it was wrong to have stated or implied that World Wrestling or any of its programs caused these tragic child wrestling deaths. Neither wrestling nor World Wrestling Entertainment specifically had anything to do with these wrestling deaths. I regret this happening. L. Brent Bozell. Those, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Now, 4th of July weekend, maybe the only radio program to broadcast this still classic from Stan Freberg.
November 1621. By now, the white man has arrived in great numbers, not only at Miami, but at Jamestown, at Plymouth, and at Salem, Massachusetts. The Puritans have established a thriving colony, enjoying all the social and cultural refinements of a modern society.
Hiya, Harv. Who are you taking to the witch burning Saturday night?
Prudence Adams. Who are you taking to the Rotary Club luncheon?
I haven't got a date yet, but I hear it's going to be quite a spread.
Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible.
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. He'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow. The one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes. What a slogan. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
Up in the morning, out on the job, I work like the devil for my pay. I know that lucky old son has got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Fuss with my woman, toil with my kids, sweat till I'm wrinkled, yeah. and gray. I know that lucky old sundown has got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Dear Lord above, now, can't you see I'm crying? I've got tears all in to take me across and wash all my troubles away. I know that lucky old sundown got nothing to do.
Live because it's the weekend. Here's Larry King Weekend.
We're in Los Angeles tonight, where I'm hosting the Cosmetic Surgery Foundation's annual Tight and Smooth Ball, which is going to raise close to $5 million in one night to help America's prematurely wrinkled children. In our New York studio tonight is the latest addition to the all-star CNN lineup, the great television journalist and the wife of maybe the most credible of all the daytime talk show hosts, Maury Povich, the great Connie Chung. Connie, great to see you again. What's it been?
About 2 weeks, Larry, since the premiere.
Oh, you've been doing great, Connie.
Thanks.
Some important interviews, a beautiful set.
It's orange, Larry. Have you noticed?
My friend Eddie Spritzker over at Nathan Al's, best delicatessen in the world, says you've got more orange on those two walls than Anita Bryant had in her whole career.
That's cute, Larry.
Yeah.
We all thought that orange helps to convey the kind of intimate feeling our program hopes to convey through, among other things, the use of the color orange, as well as the first-person interviews with people who've hosted their own CNN programs earlier in the day.
Yeah, the Wolf Blitzers, the Lou Dobbses, the Paula Zahns.
Absolutely right, Larry. And so the whole idea of the program is to make you feel as if you're part of the news.
Mm-hmm. Almost as if it's your child who got kidnapped.
That's right.
Or your house that got flooded out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we can make the viewer feel that way, we've succeeded.
It's tough.
Well, as I said to Maury back when we were trying to have a child, nobody said it's going to be easy.
But you're having fun.
With Maury, no, that stopped about.
No, I mean with the show.
Oh, gosh, Larry, you know, I haven't had a daily program since I co-anchored with Dan Rather, and that was a decade ago, so
decade.
It's huge fun,
yeah.
But it's also a huge challenge.
Tell me about it.
But each day, I get out of bed knowing one thing.
This is still about the show.
Mm-hmm. I know that I'm going to spend the whole day getting to the heart of one person who's in the news, whether it's a member of Elizabeth Smart's family or the lawyer for their caretaker.
Gunny, a lot of the gossips that flutter around our business kind of like flies at a picnic. We're thinking that there'd be some kind of a feud between your show and this one over guests.
Yeah, Larry, I think the CNN viewer is sophisticated enough to know that we do very different shows. Your program is so much more oriented to Washington and celebrities than mine is. And while I'm sure we'll have our share of movie stars and singers on our program if, God forbid, their child gets kidnapped or their house floods out, let me tell you, with all respect, I think I'd go home and try to slit my wrists if my lead guest for the evening was Senator Chuck Hagel.
He's a good guest.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Now, I know what you mean. And speaking of great guests, Thursday night we spend the whole hour with Cher and Representative Mary Bono together for the first time sharing their memories of Sonny. Right now, Connie Chung is with us. Connie, the big controversy this week was over two songs that didn't get played on the big 4th of July TV shows.
Well, that's right, Larry. Charlie Daniels, his very angry song about 9/11 was cut from the PBS holiday show.
Yeah.
Toby Keith's very angry patriotic song was taken off Peter Jennings' music show on ABC. And I'm sorry to say, although I'm very happy to be here at CNN, the executives here wouldn't let me sing a patriotic song that Maury and I have written.
Yeah, I heard about that. What's it called?
Let's Put Some Yellow in the Red, White, and Blue. It's a song calling for more patriotism among our Asian American friends in the wake of 9/11.
Yeah, calling for patriotism. That doesn't sound too controversial to me.
Mm-mm.
Hey, most of us are still wearing the flag pins, if for no other reason than to avoid the fines.
Well, I think in this case the decision was based more on the idea the executives had at our show that I couldn't sing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not going to be the next Madonna or anything, Larry, but Maury and I have been working on a stage show about two lives in television called Light Years.
Light Years, is this astronomy or physics related?
No, it's years spent under the lights.
Ah.
And that's got original music in it that we sing.
Really? Mm-hmm. So is this something that's going to be on the New York stage this season? Can we see it?
I don't think so, Larry. Not with my new show.
Yeah.
It was something we were working on during my hiatus at ABC.
That sounds great. So anyway, you won't be singing a song here either, will you?
No, Larry. I'm sorry to say the same decision applies here.
Yeah. Also, we stopped having post 9/11 songs here. It was driving viewers over to Hannity and Combs in a stretch.
I know. That's too bad. But as soon as we get the website up for our program, we'll put the song there.
That's great.
Of course, that may not be till mid-October, but
can't wait to hear it. The great Connie Chung. Tomorrow night, Hosni Mubarak and Jackie Collins. And Connie, tomorrow you got
Larry, I had the first interview with Amy Fisher since she became a newspaper columnist.
The great Aaron Brown is next from Los Angeles. Good night.
My shoes, sand from Havana. calling me to that ever so heavenly shore, calling me back to you once more. Dreams in the night, dreams of Havana, dreams of a love I haven't the strength to refuse. Darling, the sand is in my shoes. Deep in my veins, the sensuous strains of the soft guitars. Deep in my soul, the thundering roll of a tropic sea. Under the stars. Havana, you are the moonlit memory I can't seem to lose. That's why my life's an aimless cruise. All that is real is the feel of the sand in my shoes. Ah, sand. An aimless cruise. All that is real is the feel of the sand in my shoes.
Sand in my shoes.
Sand in my shoes.
Sand in my shoes.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me read the trades for you, if I may. I think I may. May I? Yes, I may. Wait for that musical permission. Because we have this ongoing discussion here on the broadcast about whether we're thieves when we avoid commercials. Jamie Kellner, you may remember, the guy who's fixed CNN, alleged recently that those of us who skip commercials when we record television programs, we're stealing the programming. So now, new information comes out from Advertising Age. Personal video recorder users skip most ads. I'll read it for you. New research into the controversial phenomenon of personal video recorders. These are the basically TiVo. Finds users skip commercials 72.3% of the time, a much higher rate than those watching live TV or those using videotape recorders. Hey, I didn't tell you to go digital. But they are least likely to pass over commercials for beer and drugs. Ooh, what a thunk it! The research from CNW Marketing Research in Bandon, Oregon, finds that users of PVR, such as TiVo, will skip over a beer commercial only 32% of the time. Drugs are the only other category out of 14 measured in the study to keep the attention of more than 50% of personal video recorder owners. From the research, we found that beer ads had high entertainment values, said Art Spinella, vice president and general manager at the marketing research firm. CNW Marketing Research is primarily known for its automotive research. Oh, sure. And the study was done mainly to learn about viewer habits in the automotive category. While its methodology was not designed to be definitive for other categories, they're so scientific and rigorous in the advertising business, aren't they? The results may offer a window into the still new world of PVRs, a worrisome area for advertisers concerned about commercial avoidance. The skip rate is indeed high. The 72% figure for PVR owners rejecting commercials well outdistanced that for viewers fast-forwarding to commercials on videotape 15% of the time, and those who ignore commercials on live television 44% of the time. The research characterizes ignoring live TV as getting a snack, starting a conversation, or going to the bathroom. You may think you're starting a conversation, but you're ignoring TV. Top categories where consumers fast forward through commercials with PVRs include fast food, credit cards, mortgage financing, home products, and TV network promos for upcoming shows, all of which were rejected 90% or more of the time. National automotive ads were skipped by PVR owners 71% of the time, more than that for feminine product spots, avoided 64% of the time. A major turnoff was TV program promos. This category ranked third overall in consumers' avoidance behavior. Beer was also the best performer when it came to live TV. Only 4% of the time did consumers ignore beer commercials. Said a longtime TV research executive, "It's all that sex in beer commercials." Are we discovering the obvious yet? But didn't we find last week that people remember stuff with sex less? It's too confusing. Yes, confusion runs rampant, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. Now, yes, Toby Keith and Charlie Daniels were rejected for 4th of July play because their songs were too angry, as was this one.
Now I was raised a decent way to swell my heart with pride. Each and every time I saw glory passing by, raised to think that America was a place you loved to love. And the stars stood for heaven, stripes stood for faith, and that old flag is what God meant man to fly. But somewhere from a spaceship maybe comes another breed. Oh, these folks are so nutty that it's crazy glue they bleed. And they burn the beloved symbol of our nation's liberty. But the stars still stand for heaven, the stripes still stand for faith, and a killing's what these people really need. So let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. We'll declare them independent of their skins. We'll bake us up some taters, roast some desecrators. Let them fry on the 4th of July. The flag is just a little more than fabric and some thread. Its blue came from the heavens, from the blood of patriots came its red. And the white came from the only race that's voted since the start. So the stars stand for heaven, the stripes stand for faith. You put those dreams of burning it to bed. Now some people talk of freedom. Let me tell you, friends, your freedom doesn't start until the time when my nose ends. And people gave their lives so I could sing this little song. And the stars stand for heaven, the stripes stand for faith, and the flag that's burned to ashes never mends. So let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. Make them part of the fireworks display. We'll shoot off Roman candles and electrocute the vandals. Let them fry on the 4th of July. We'll let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. Yeah, Miss Betsy Ross would have wanted it this way. If they don't like it here, they can leave it all behind. Let them fry on the 4th of July. 4th of July. 4th of July. July.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it around the world in two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it'd be just like having another reason why George W. Bush didn't report those interesting accounting practices in a timely manner. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you. A reason that's pretty close to the truth. Would you join me then? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.